Today is Tuesday, March 17th. This is the Job Growth, Energy Affordability Policy and Finance Committee. I'll call the meeting to order. First order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Simonson moves approval of the minutes dated Monday, March 16th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails on a 1-0 vote. Representative Hamilton, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was looking around for my testifiers, and I do not see them yet, but if, in essence of time, if we can get started, I could walk you through the bill.
Sure. Well, first of all, Representative Hamilton, the let me find my list of what is going where. Thank you. Are we taking up 1837?
Yes.
All right. So the chair will move that House File 1837 be moved for possible inclusion in a later bill. Representative Hamilton. Representative Hamilton, I'll take this opportunity to remind you it is St. Patrick's Day and that we have many bills on the agenda, and the committee rewards brevity. Representative Hamilton.
All right, Mr. Chairman, this is a great bill. It has to do with Little Africa Revolving Loan Fund and Virtual Marketing Network. Do you have any questions?
No. This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? I think you do have a testifier.
Oh,
excellent.
Yes, please. Have a seat.
Mr. Chairman, my testifiers are here.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. We were expecting it to be a little later down the, but the people are in the room. My name is Dr. Bruce Corey. I am an economist. And I've been part of a study on the market potential of African immigrants, and I'll give you a copy of a summary of the results. The African market is of at least $1.6 billion in income, and they are about over 2,000 firms. And if you can see in they pay an estimated $183 million in taxes, and there's a rich and vibrant entrepreneurial energy that we found out in this firm. So the plan of the proposal is to tap into this energy through a marketing and branding campaign focusing on these businesses to connect them through a virtual network called Little Africa. And if you've seen, get a beat to a Chinatown or on University Avenue, Little Mekong, the concept would be to create a similar concept here, but also connect it to rural Minnesota. And one of the things that we found out in our study was the strong entrepreneurial energy among in African women. And so we have two organizations, and they are here, the African Economic Development Solutions and ISRUN. African Economic Development Solutions has technical expertise in economic development, and ISRUN is a group that focuses on empowering female in the African immigrant community, and these two groups are going to be part of the network that will implement this policy. And we also have somewhere in this room the entrepreneurs too that would be happy to answer questions. But beware.
Thank you for your presentation, sir. Representative Hamilton, this is a public hearing, so I think we've heard a good overview over the bill. Are there any members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Rod?
We do have one person coming forward.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Gene Galgalo, Executive Director at African Economic Development Solutions, nonprofit organization that serves African immigrants, 1821 University Avenue, Suite S227, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55104. Respected committee chair, Representative Hamilton, and member of the committee, thank you very much for this honor to testify, and most importantly, to take time from your busy schedule to hear our project. We have been working on the Little Africa concept for the past couple of years. Last year, we had Little Africa Fest at the Snelling Avenue in St. Paul, which local businesses, neighborhood, and businesses, community came from different variety of places, from 15 C and 32 zip code. Right. Over 200 people attended, which bring economic activity to the neighborhood. We see art as an economic engine to create, attract more businesses to the community. From the festival, they were immediately thinking about launch new product. Community art spoke about with us about their new venture mural, and we are working on how to increase the facade improvement in the neighborhood to create attract more businesses to the corridor. We see culture can be a very effective tool for economic development for low-income neighborhoods. It also creates jobs, and we are currently working on the business owners and neighborhood to increase their capacity and attract the mainstream to the corridor, and also bring more economic activity to the corridor. What is that's for that area, but what we envision is to create a virtual connection also. This no doubt place can benefit other area and other location through a virtual connection. We have a business owners here in the room, Dr. Abe Dalu, who have a home healthcare business, started a couple of years ago here in St. Paul in Midway area to serve in healthcare area. These businesses, they need a revolving loan fund that, you know, many of our research we did past this summer, the need, majority of survey show us there's a need for a loan fund. And from the this, we want to leverage our also as a attracting business. Meantime, the challenge is how we get this loan fund to help businesses to either start their business or expand their businesses.
So, Representative Hamilton, as I read the bill, $275,000 in one-time appropriation money, $100,000 of that would go into the revolving loan fund that would finance itself, $175,000 to other issues. Is that correct, Representative Hamilton?
Mr. Chairman, yes. And that for that $75,000 would apply specifically, put an emphasis on women, a woman-owned or women-owned businesses, and focus on their entrepreneurship as well.
Thank you. Members, a pretty straightforward bill. Are there any questions, Representative Mahoney?
Well, Mr. Chair, I thought I'd continue on with the conversation from this afternoon. This is a good bill. The testifier and I have talked a little bit earlier this summer about the need for African immigrants and African immigrants to create and start the businesses in the metro area, where we have a burgeoning group of them. So I would hope members, I hope the chair looks favorably upon this as we put our bill together.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton, any closing comments?
You know what, you heard from the testifier, and thank you, Representative Mahoney, as well. I was ready to take the gloves off. I'm just teasing. I think this is a great initiative, and I'd ask for your support, Mr. Chair.
The chair renews his motion of House File 1837 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you very much, Representative Hamilton, and thank you to our testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hillstrom, come on down. Representative Hillstrom, originally we were going to send this to we were going to send this elsewhere, and then a fiscal note popped up. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so Representative Hillstrom, if it's okay with you, what I'm going to do is I'm going to move this for possible inclusion in a later bill. Is that okay to you?
Yes, thank you.
Do you have any amendments, Representative Hillstrom?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Hillstrom, do your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be very brief. House File 368 basically just expands who we include under the regulations for when you're collecting a debt, and it just adds individuals who buy debt.
Perfect. This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with this very non-controversial bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and move to member questions. Member questions? Seeing none, Representative Hillstrom, simple, easy, direct, no one opposes it. It's a good idea.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commerce is all for it, so I'd like you to...
Oh, well, hold on then.
Bill.
Wait. So with that, Representative Hillstrom, any closing comments? Or?
No, I just hope that you'll consider including it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, the Chair renews his motion to have House File 368 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you. Okay, next on the list is House File 1478. The Chair will move House File 1478 be recommended to pass and referred to the Transportation Committee. Ms. Haas, if you want to come on down while I present this. Members, what this bill does, it's a creative idea that I'm authoring to help introduce energy affordability into the sales tax mix. Right now, there is a metro area sales tax in five counties that goes to the CTIP board to pay for transit. What this would do is it would exclude this tax. This tax would no longer apply to these specific energy costs, sales and purchases of electricity and natural gas. I have no testifiers. This is a public hearing. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members, Nancy Haas with Messerly and Kramer here on behalf of the County's Transit Improvement Board. In the interest of brevity, I will just mention that CTIB is the five-county Anoka, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Washington who did impose the quarter-cent sales tax. We do some wonderful work in connecting transitways that serve as a catalyst for economic development and job growth. I know important to this committee. I'm a little bit out of my element talking about energy and utilities, and we don't have anything against our utility partners. In fact, I'm sure quite many of their employees take our great transit ways, and also we in turn use their services in some of our vehicles, like the light rail and our fleet vehicles. So we would rather err on the side of keeping our partnership together and working together with our tax and transit initiatives.
Thank you very much. This is a public hearing. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none. Members of the public? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and now move to member questions. Representative Hortman and Isaacson. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know what percentage of the employees of Excel and CenterPoint use transit to get to work in downtown Minneapolis?
Representative Hortman, I do not.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a fiscal with this?
Representative Isaacson, we've requested a revenue note. We do not have it yet. In reality, it probably should have went to transportation first, but we're going to send it there, and I'm sure they're going to give it the due consideration that it deserves. So Representative Isaacson.
Well, I have 21 more questions, so just kidding.
Just 21? Any other questions for members of the committee? Representative Wagenius.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. What do you expect the outcome of this bill to be? I mean, what's your intended outcome here?
Representative Wagenius, the title of this committee is one of the words that we use is energy affordability, and this is just a creative way to help reduce the energy costs for those businesses and homeowners who live in the five-county metro area who are paying this extra sales tax on their bills. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. So if I understand this correctly, then there will not be as much money for Metro Transit because there is not that much money left. So,
Representative Wagenius, I don't want to correct you, but I don't think CTIB is used to fund Metro Transit. I think it's the capital projects that are it's used as a financing mechanism for capital projects in the five-county metro area. I do not look at it. I believe I'm correct about that, but Representative Wagenius.
Well, what do you expect the consequences there to be then? If you could just help us understand it. I'm not asking you a question I don't understand.
No, that's good. Now, Representative Wagenius, what's going to happen is that the CTIB revenue stream is going to take a little nick. It's going to take you're talking about a very small portion of the five-county metro area tax base, but it's going to mean more energy affordability for customers. I think the impact on our transit system would be negligible, maybe not even noticeable, but I can't give you a firm answer on that until we receive the revenue note in transportation. With regards to the energy policy jurisdiction of this committee, what it would mean is that those homeowners and businesses in the five-county metro area, they're going to get a little bit of savings on their energy bill.
That's what I thought. But we don't know what that means for transit.
We would need to wait for the revenue note, but I would imagine it would be a modest amount. Any other questions, Representative Wagenius?
No, it's very all very short.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I will grant the fact that I'm a little, I don't know what the dollar figure is. And negligible is always in the eye of the beholder. And maybe there, if it comes back at what I would call not negligible, would the committee chair bring it back so that we could bring this bill back to the committee so that we could actually have a conversation if it's, say, over $100,000 or over $1 million? Because I think that would be fair.
Representative Mahoney, I would say that the jurisdiction of this committee is the energy affordability aspect of it.
Correct.
So whatever savings are given to ratepayers is going to mean a reduction in transit funding of the equal amount. So with regards to that being in this committee, what that amount is, we will find out in transportation, and we may have another hearing on this issue. It may not. I would suspect that if this bill is going to move forward, it would need to be before this committee once again. Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, and the conversation might delve into the fact that I know it's not CTUB, but it is it's the ability for stations to be built and other things and plans to be laid out that could reduce the cost for people using vehicles, because if you lower your use of a vehicle, say you go from two-car to one-car family, you're saving $6,000. So there is some other things here, and again, I'm just going to lay that out there and let you know that you may have a conversation with me a little later about bringing the bill back.
Always look forward to conversations with the Representative Mahoney. But again, we really want it. We were hoping we would have the revenue now, but we do not have it. So, Representative Hortman and Isaacson both a second time. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I just request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Isaacson.
I would just like to know why all the treats are on that side of the room. And if we can do something to create some equity within the treats, that'd be great. Thank you.
All right. That's what I'm talking about. Okay. So the one. Okay. So additional questions from members of the committee. Okay. With that, what the chair is going to do is he's going to temporarily put this bill on the side, and we're going to move on to our next bill, and then we'll take it up and make sure, because there's a roll call vote, that we have as many members of the committee as present as possible. So with that, the chair will move House File 1478, lay on the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Motion prevails. Representative Lucero. The chair will move House File 1378 for possible inclusion in a later bill. Representative Lucero, do you have any amendments for your bill?
I do, Mr. Chair, and I will offer the DE2 amendment.
Well, you won't because you're not on this committee.
I would ask you to.
The chair will move the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. Seeing any discussion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a few testifiers here, so I will have just a few opening remarks. So as we're aware, utilities are unique in that they are highly regulated monopolies in Minnesota here and other places, but Minnesota, and we're also aware that energy, the demand for energy continues to increase. But utilities expanding their capacity creates unique challenges because of the potential impact to ratepayers as well as the infrastructure of utilities. It's not necessarily easy to expand capacity of the infrastructure in the ground, etc. So that, as we've seen in the last decade or more, using existing infrastructure and being innovative with products to help increase the efficiency of the existing infrastructure and squeeze more out of that infrastructure. So with that being said, with that foundation, that's the motivation of this bill here, is to continue to create opportunities for technologies that are being developed and have them presented to utilities in a manner that will, again, help to increase efficiencies. So this right here would be an interface between those technology innovators and the utility companies. The idea being technologies developed would work. Well, you know what? At this point, I'll just pass on so you can explain the.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Sullivan. I'm with the Center for Energy and Environment. And first, would like to thank Representative Lucero for carrying this bill, and then also to thank the chair and the committee for hearing it tonight. So really, the kind of the 10,000 foot, what we're trying to do here with this legislation, and then I'll kick it over to Mr. Sadlowski here, Rich Sadlowski. He's the director of engineering at CEE. But the focus here is trying to get our heads wrapped around and addressing the organic efficiency that's happening, the latent efficiency that's happening within the economy, within the electric sector. Utilities will talk about this. They talk about it as an issue that they have to deal with. And what that looks like is electric sales have basically been planed off, that they're not growing. Electric sales growth has really stabilized, or it's flattened out. And from the electric utilities perspective, they know that efficiency is occurring, but they can't account for it in their conservation improvement plans. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to give them the tools with the accelerator here to help them look at that efficiency and in some cases, you know, build the next generation of conservation improvement plans. And so that they can include that in their their conservation going forward. So the purpose of the accelerator is to identify, research, test, evaluate, and incubate innovative energy technologies. These would be things like, better meters, like smart meters, or smart thermostats that are on people's homes, lighting and whatnot, but the next generation. And then to make those and help those become the basis for new cost-effective programs to improve existing programs offered by the utilities. There's a couple things that I'd like to mention before I send it over to Mr. Sadlowski, but we've done a lot of work with the electric utilities on this. We've talked to Xcel Energy, we've talked to Minnesota Power, we've talked to the rural electric co-ops. We've talked to the municipal utilities. Xcel is in support of the legislation. Minnesota Power told us earlier today that they support the legislation. They understand what we're trying to do, and they think it's a service. And the rural electric co-ops testified in support of this bill in the Senate last week. So we are, we're really trying to get at a problem that utilities are facing and trying to incorporate new technologies into it. And one of the other things that the request is for general fund appropriations. We're looking the legislation would appropriate $400,000 per year of the biennium to the Department of Commerce. Specifically, we did that. The utilities were interested in that we did that for the. To work with the utilities on the bill. So with that, I'll pass it over to Mr. Sadlowski.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Richard Sadlowski, Director of Engineering and Business Development for Center for Energy and Environment. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for your time here. So what I'm going to do is just give you a very quick kind of overview from an engineering perspective on what we hope to get out of this process. One of the things that we've done over the years is look at how conservation improvement programs work both in Minnesota and elsewhere. Over the last 20 years that I've been at the Center for Energy and Environment, I've been involved in program delivery, program design, research activities, and so we see kind of the process end to end and have seen that there's been a gap in that process. And in looking at what other states have done, we've identified best practices that other states have done as well. So, for example, the Consortium for Energy Efficiency rates all the states for their energy efficiency programs. The top 20 states in their scorecard have a emerging technology program somewhat similar to what we're talking about here. That includes Wisconsin and Iowa most locally. But the idea behind all those programs is to bring new emerging technologies into the utility conservation improvement programs quicker than they would have happened otherwise. The whole point is to accelerate that process, allow the utilities to take advantage of those new technologies more quickly, bring them into their programs, get higher participation rates, and in the end, the utilities and the ratepayers benefit by having higher energy efficiency delivered to ratepayers sooner than they would have otherwise. So what we've tried to do is bring best practices from what we've seen in other states that's worked that they feel has done a real help, has really helped them in their conservation improvement programs, and taken the best of those ideas and brought them forward here. So the whole goal here is to provide a resource for the utilities that we then provide information to them to say, okay, technology A or service A that's come knocking on your door, you don't have a good way to evaluate that. Through this program, we can evaluate that and provide information to those utilities, to the Division of Energy Resources, to let them make more informed decisions going forward. The whole point here is to provide information. There are no requirements. We aren't requiring that the utilities do anything. We're simply providing a service to them that they otherwise cannot do because of their current budgeting and structure. And in case of a lot of the smaller utilities, they simply don't have the manpower to do that. So if you look at some of the smaller municipal utilities, if someone comes knocking on their door with a great idea, they don't know how to evaluate that. Our intent here is to provide a central source that's more efficient and provides that information to all the utilities simultaneously. So the customers of this service are the utilities and the Division of Energy Resources. I'm going to stop there because I think all of you are busy, but I'll certainly stay for questions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lucero, do you have any additional testifiers?
I have no additional testifiers, Mr. Chair, but I would like to make one additional point.
Why don't we do that when you're doing your closing statement, if that's
perfect.
Okay. This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of the bill and move to member questions. Questions from member of the committee. Representative Mahoney and Wagenius. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this would be to either the testifiers or the author. I did not see this bill in the governor's first budget supplement budget or his supplemental budget. So have, you know, where's the governor on this? And then I've got one other question.
Mr. Sullivan, or I guess do you want to have, is there someone from the governor's office wishes to state the governor's position on this bill? No one from the governor's office here, Representative Mahoney, to state the governor's position on the issue.
All
Representative
right.
Mahoney, was it a rhetorical question? Do you know the governor's position on the issue?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
Well, we'll have to. We'll have the committee staff contact the governor's staff, and we can ask them what the position. Mr. Sullivan, Representative Sullivan, do you know the governor's position on it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we've been talking with the Division of Energy Resources. We've talked to Director Grant. We've talked to staff within the division. And, you know, they, when we talk to them, you know, they're supportive of what we're trying to accomplish. They recognize this as an issue. They recognize the organic efficiency and how to get kind of credit for it, or how to get a hold of it, how to understand it better is something that, you know, that utilities struggle with. They see the value in the proposal that we're offering. So I can tell you that, you know, I don't want to speak for them, but I think that they're supportive of the concept, but I don't think that they have taken a formal position on the bill.
Representative Mahoney?
And to the testifiers or the author of the bill, on line 1.10, when you say cash or in-kind, do you have any idea what the in-kind contributions might be?
Mr. Sullivan?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, the bill requires that the grant recipient would be required to put up $100,000 of its own resources for in order to get the match. Or would have to match $100,000 in order to be eligible to get the $400,000.
So employee, staff time, technical resources, things like that, Mr. Sullivan?
Exactly, yes. We foresee this to be both actual resources from Center for Energy and Environment in terms of, you know, resources that we would put into it, as well as staff time. It's mostly going to be staff time and our own dollars.
Well, Mr. Chair, one more.
I just want to kind of forewarn the testifier: when you put in-kind contributions, you're going to need to keep track of them.
Thank you, Representative Lagunias.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lucero, you've got some smart testifiers here, and I look online 1.13, and it talks about incubate innovative energy technologies, and I'm going to assume for a minute that they discovered something really good, and it's worth a lot of money. Do you have a process, if you sell this technology or share it with somebody else, that the state can be reimbursed, or, like we do in LCCMR, the state would get a cut of the money ongoing?
Mr. Sullivan, or the testifier, does the bill currently address those situations?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, the bill currently has there's a provision, I don't have the language in front of me right now, but the provision that requires exactly to Representative Wagenius' question, there is not a repayment provision within the legislation. I think that is an interesting idea. The bill does specifically require that, and the strength of CEE is that we're a nonprofit, that we kind of inherently are not conflicted. The language in the bill right now is specific to, you know, prohibiting a conflict of interest, that there would be no kind of mixture of resources. But that's an interesting, you know, we haven't thought through that, but it's interesting.
Sounds like a conversation for a future day. Representative Lagunias?
Well, if the state is going to put money at risk for innovation, and I don't have a problem with that, that's taxpayer dollars, and the taxpayers should be rewarded for the risk they're putting forward. So we do have models in other areas, and I don't see why that model shouldn't be adopted here.
Mr. Chair? Representative Lucero.
And Representative Wagenius, that was kind of the point that I wanted to make, was that I wanted to clarify that my understanding is that the CCE will not in and of itself be developing new technologies. It's going to be, imagine you have inventors out there who develop a neat technology to increase efficiency. Now, they cannot just go up and walk on, it's difficult to go up and walk on the knock on the door of Xcel Energy. Hey, I have this really nifty product. What this is going to do is it creates that interface so that inventors of these technologies that would go and CCE would act as an independent reviewer of that to authenticate that the claims of that would be genuine, and then they can explain to the utilities that indeed this product is doing what it's intended to do.
Representative Wagenius, go ahead. One more question.
Well, it's not so much a question as an observation. On line 1.13, it says incubate innovative energy technologies. So in the process of that, under your own language, you could come up with something really good. And now that we've had taxpayer money to invest it, it's only fair that we taxpayers have put their money at risk. It's only fair that the taxpayers get rewarded.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to thank Representative Lucero for carrying the bill. I think it's a great idea, and I hope that it will make its way into the omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any additional questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Lucero, any closing comments?
My only closing comment would be I misspoke. It's not CCE, it's CEE. I look forward to your support.
Absolutely. With that, the chair renews his motion to have House File 1378 laid over, as amended, laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you, Representative Lucero. And just one more thing. This is your first time to this committee. Do you have the treats?
Okay, so my understanding, maybe
wrong. Sorry, the chair had a question. Do you have the treats?
My understanding, Mr.
Representative Lucero, do you have the treats? Yes,
I do not have treats.
Okay, with that, the chair will dispose of 1378. No, I'm just kidding. Next time, Representative Lucero.
So, point of information, Mr. Chair. My understanding was that it was, and I could be incorrect, my understanding was that it was the first bill to the first committee, but my understanding is that it's the first bill to every committee.
Representative Lucero, what you'll find out is that in your first term, you should just always bring treats for every single bill. And I'll tell you, your first term, you're not going to like it, but the longer you're here, the more you like the rule. So,
Mr. Chair.
With that, Representative Lucero, you're done, so thank you. Who is Representative Neuberger?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will you please remind the committee what happened when Representative Smith got us sugared up?
Yeah, that's right. It done well. All right, thank you, Representative Lucero. Thank you. Thank you to our testifiers.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hortman.
I'll give Representative Lucero credit for the popcorn. You owe me a green beer.
That's a perch, right? All right.
Thank you, Eric.
All right, so with that, the chair will move House File 1478 be removed from the table. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Roll call has been requested on House File 1478. The clerk will take the roll.
Garofalo.
Yes.
Baker.
Yes.
Mahoney. Clark. Fabian.
Yes.
Gunther. Portman.
No.
Isaacson.
Yes.
Johnson.
No.
Lunin.
Yes.
Metza. Neuberger.
Yes.
O'Neill.
Yes.
Scott.
Yes.
Simonson.
No.
Smith.
Yes.
Swazinski.
Yes.
Vogel.
Yes.
Wagenius.
No.
There being 12 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails, and the amendment, the bill is adopted. Next on the agenda, we have, Representative Lewick here?
Yep.
Representative Lewick. Yeah.
Yep.
Representative Lewick, do you have someone to move your bill? Okay, Representative Isaacson moves that House File 1186 be recommended to pass and referred to... I have two targets on my list here. Mr. Kennedy, where's this bill going? Because I have two on my list here. I can't... Is there a fiscal note?
There is not.
We have two of them listed. Representative Isaacson moves that House File 1186 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Lewick, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What this bill does would deconflict some regulatory and licensing requirements. We've got the Mine Safety and Health Administration that closely regulates all mining in the United States. Very similar to the way the Coast Guard regulates all surface navigation, commercial surface navigation, and the way FFA does all licensing and air operations. And what this would do would be to clarify things and basically recognize that and put the companies that are engaged in mining in a similar situation with other companies like public utilities companies that produce and transmit our electricity. They've got an exemption from the state licensing. Make no mistake, this does not in any way reduce or ease the regulatory or the safety requirements within the mining industry at all. It simply provide a clear path for the industry to operate within. So with that, and I do have a testifier here, Mr. Coyle.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Coyle. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Peter Coyle of Larkin Hoffman on behalf of United States Steel. The bill that's been offered by Representative Lewick, House File 1186, does a couple of things. First of all, as he noted, it attempts to streamline the process by which employees of mining companies, only mining companies, can be qualified for licensure based on the work that they're performing for their employer on site. It also would grant an exemption to mining companies from having to register as mining employers, which current law requires, which would be similar to exemptions that are granted in other areas of the statute currently. As Representative Lewick noted, the inspection role that the federal government plays for all electrical work performed at a mining site is unaffected because that's, of course, driven by federal law. More importantly, it doesn't affect in the slightest the ability of an employee working for a mining company to be licensed as an electrician, either as a journeyman or as a master. In fact, U.S. Steel, among all the other mining companies, has a very strong interest in seeing their employees who wish to be licensed pursue licensure and support them in that. But it does allow us to manage our administrative staffing more efficiently, while also preserving the ability of our employees to be licensed as they choose to. The final point is it confirms the ability of a master electrician or an electrical engineer to certify the hours of our employees toward licensure at the discretion of the employee who is seeking licensure. This is a very important initiative to the mining industry. It's a cost-saving measure of a sort with respect to the administrative overhead. It's not imposed by the Department of Labor and Industry, and it's supported by our labor employees and partners at the mining site, the United Steelworkers. And those are my comments, Mr. Chairman. I'll be happy to respond to questions.
Okay, this is a public hearing. Representative Lewick, is that your only testifier today?
Yes. Yes.
This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public. Oh, we do have a testifier. Come on down. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Thaden. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Contractors of the National Electrical Contractors Association, and we oppose this bill. Unfortunately, it is not as simple as portrayed by the previous testifier. If it was that simple, you could just say Minnesota electrical statutes don't apply where the Federal Mine Act applies, but instead they want to get out of the obligations of licensing but still reap the benefits. The first sentence says that they don't have to have a license, and the second sentence says that they get to account for their hours if they were to apply for a license and work someplace else. So in other words, these people, we'd have no idea what they had worked on, how they had done in their in the field when they were working on the mines, and yet they would get electrical license and could wire commercial work, residential work, industrial work throughout the state of Minnesota. There is already opportunities for the mining industry. If they feel that there is licensing, they can register as employers and let those electrical employees work on their mines on their own property. And it costs $110 and a two-page form for the mining companies. Or they could register as an electrical contractor and account for their employees that way. In addition, the final reason that you should vote against this bill is I believe on St. Patrick's Day, I am wearing the most green. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Strasinski, and I represent the Minnesota Electrical Association, and I want to echo the concerns expressed by Mr. Thaden a moment ago. We, too, oppose this bill. We think licensure, which has been developed for over a number of years, 50 years in Minnesota as it relates to electricity, is extremely important. It has to mean something, and to provide exemptions from that for people to do electrical work. It doesn't say master electrician to shall manage apprenticeship programs. It says a licensed electrician. It says electricians. That's a name definition given by somebody in the mines. It also provides for electrical engineers to do certifications of the workmen certified by somebody in the mine that would qualify towards an apprenticeship program. That doesn't exist anyplace else. That's outside the mine. I mean, in our business, our industry, throughout rural Minnesota, where most of our rural electrical contractors are, who have apprenticeship programs, and electrical engineer cannot certify on those programs. So we're creating a whole new avenue here, which is of deep concern to all of us. And I do submit to you, we think from a practical perspective that the electrical generating company is a little different than a mine, and that we understand the exemptions that apply to electrical generating facilities. So to us, if licensure means something, and we think it does, this bill is headed in the wrong direction, Mr. Chairman, with all due respect to the author. We know his intentions are good. However, these people may leave the mine employ and come out in the private sector, work for one of our contractors, and we think they're qualified and certified, and they're not, because they may have had some of their hours registered with the Department of Labor and Industry, but yet they haven't had the kinds of training that we expect normally in apprenticeship training programs. So you deal with those issues all of the time, and we would ask the committee to kind of slow this thing down a little bit, because we have some deep concerns, and I think you're going to find everybody that does electrical work in Minnesota as contractors and employees and employers and employees has the same concern. Thank you for your time.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a complicated issue locally. I represent the plants and some of the members that are IBEW who work out there. I hope that the committee today could maybe hold it over and give us a little bit more time due to the KTAC shutdowns that kind of derailed a few of the conversations that were happening to try to get everyone on the same page. And I think it deserves a little more time to get in, I guess, the best position. I'm not opposed to the idea moving forward should you choose differently, but I think there's time to get it with a little more peace in the valley.
And I'm gonna defer to the judgment of the author of the bill, but it sounds like there's conversations going on. We do have an additional testifier, so we're going to do that. And then Representative Lewick, just if you could just kind of, it seems like there is some stakeholder, it sounds like people share the same objectives, but that maybe the current language, there's some concerns that need to be addressed. So we'll do public testimony, and then we'll come back to that. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Haney. I'm legislative and political director for IBEW, Minnesota State Council. When we first saw the bill, we were concerned about it and had talked to U.S. Steel and others to try to see if there was some middle ground on it. And the more hours that we spent on the bill, as they say, the worser it got. For a two-line, two-sentence bill, I don't think I've ever spent so many hours reading and rereading and looking at the law and the rules, trying to figure out exactly all the implications. We are opposed to the bill, and David Ibarra with the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters UA was unable to be here, but he asked me to let you know that they're also opposed to the bill. First of all, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's really no need for this bill. The existing law provides a track for the mining company to register as an employer with people doing electrical work, designate a master electrician, and then have people that are registered as unlicensed individuals doing electrical work have their hours tracked, have a master sign off on that, so that they can get the credit they need for a number of hours to sit for their journeyman electrical license, electrician license exam. The mining company says it's too administratively burdensome, as one of the previous testifiers said. It's a two-page form filed once every other year for a tiny fine, or not fine, but permit fee. And it's not an administrative burden. Where the burden comes in for the mining company is this. They don't want to have the supervision of the electrical work that is going on in their mine that's required under Minnesota law. The Minnesota law says that you have to have licensed people have to supervise the work of unlicensed people doing this work, and they want to avoid that. That supervisory requirement is there for reasons, to be sure that when you're learning the trade, when you're learning electrical theory, when you're learning the hands-on part of wiring up stuff, that somebody's there mentoring you. If you put a little bit wrong somewhere, they say, hold on a minute, here's why
shouldn't do it that way. Somebody can get fried. Electricity is dangerous stuff, and you want to maintain the integrity of the licensing process for anybody that gets licensed as an electrician, whether they're union or not. If this bill becomes law, basically read it, and it says that the company and its employees are exempt from licensure requirements under the law. That means that anybody can wire up stuff at the mine. Any of you could, you know, or I could. That's scary. I got a political science degree. I'm not an electrician. And that wouldn't be good. You know, they have a lot of layoffs going on up there, and that's really sad. When they hire back, who knows who they're going to hire back? They could hire people that got laid off from the local bakery to come in and do wiring. And that would be really bad, too. The National Electrical Code is developed as part of the National Fire Protection Agency. It's Article 70, and it's a well-thought-out, well-researched years in development and keep it going and keep it refined and up to date. And it's a very important document that people understand when they become licensed. So basically, this bill, while it provides a little different path for people to get licensed as electricians, people that are working in the mine, they already have a path. The company just doesn't care enough for them to take it. The other part of this bill just says, basically it gives the mining company a path so anybody can do wiring up there, and I don't think that's what the state of Minnesota policy is in the best interest of the state of Minnesota policy at all. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And members, I think we got the orders of our bills mixed up here, so I know Representative I'm expecting Representative Isaacson wants to withdraw his motion that he moved this bill. So before I move this bill, Representative Lewick, it sounds like there's some stakeholder conversations that are still ongoing, but it's your bill. If you want to progress it, we will. If you want to lay it over for possible inclusion and continue those conversations, we may do that as well.
I would defer to laying it over, but I would like to make a few comments here because I think we've really went off the track on what this bill is about.
Sure. So, Representative Lewick, first of all, the chair will move that House File 1186 be considered for possible inclusion in a later bill. Are there any additional members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of the bill. Mr. Coyle, I see you're up at the table. We'll go to you, and then we'll go to Mr. Representative Lewick.
Yeah, very quickly, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would say some of the comments got a little bit off the track in terms of what this bill actually does in fact. There isn't a single employee working for a mining company, if this bill were to pass, who would not have to meet the existing statutory requirements of the state of Minnesota to be qualified as a journeyman or as a master electrician. They could not hold themselves out as a licensed electrician outside of the mining company's employment without qualifying and satisfying the state of Minnesota's licensing requirements. That's point one. Point two, the idea that all of a sudden the mining companies are going to be exposed to safety risks. The existing federal inspection requirement is unaffected by this, and that is the only federal inspection requirement that exists for mines today. This bill doesn't change any of that. So the state policy that they're raising with respect to safety in the workplace is unaffected by this bill because the state doesn't play any role in inspecting the work performed at a mine site. So those are my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Powell.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Haney, I saw you in the background. You seem to dispute some of the. You want to come back up here and just. We might as well have the conversation right now. If there's a difference of opinion, that's one thing, but if there's a difference of fact. And Mr. Coyle, if you want to stay up at the table, if the page can bring a chair over, you can grab yourself a chair. There's a difference of opinion, that's one thing, but if there's a difference of fact, we should resolve that right now. So, Mr. Haney.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bill Haney, IBEW. What I believe Mr. Coyle said was that there was some assertion that a person licensed or working as an electrician in the mine could work outside of the mine as an electrician?
No.
Mr. Coyle?
What did you say?
Mr. Coyle, if you just want to restate your comments, we'll go to Mr. Haney. Again, if there's a difference of opinion, we don't need to have the debate, but if there's a difference of fact, I would like that resolved. Mr. Coyle.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, any employee of a mining company who goes through the process of becoming qualified as a licensed electrician in order to practice their craft outside of a mine site as a contractor working for a homeowner for another company has to satisfy the journeyman and master electrician requirements that would apply to anybody who would seek that licensure, whether they work for a mining company or not. So this doesn't affect in any respect the ability of an employee to qualify for licensure, to get a license from the state, and then to be able to work outside of the mine site on their own or on behalf of another mining or another electrical services company.
Mr. Haney.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The law now says that a mining company, as an employer with people doing electrical work, is supposed to register as an employer. As such, they have to designate a master electrician as the responsible party. That responsible party is the individual that is supposed to sign off on the employee hours so they can qualify to sit for the exam. All that master has to do is be comfortable with the employer records that say, you know, so-and-so did this kind of electrical work for 200 hours and this kind for 400 and whatever. That's what the current law says. This law says that the company, if it's passed, the company and the employees, one, are exempt from licensure. They don't have to hold any kind of licenses to do electrical work at a mining company property. Secondly, it says that a master or electrical engineer shall sign off on the hours if an individual is trying to get credit for those hours. Well, if you don't have to have any licensed electricians on the property, then you're not going to likely have a master electrician. You're probably going to go to under the bill here, the electrical engineer, to sign off on the hours. The only place an electrical engineer can sign off on hours now under current law is for maintenance electricians. Maintenance electricians are doing maintenance work. They're not doing brand new wiring. And there's a big difference there. So that's part of the factual difference here in this.
Mr. Coyle.
Very quickly, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if you look at line 3.27 of the bill, which references the ability of a master electrician or an electrical engineer to sign off on hours, the phrasing, working for the company in Minnesota and knowledgeable about the individual's work, was actually language suggested by Mr. Haney's organization, which we adopted. So at the time, that was acceptable to them. I just want to be clear about that.
Mr. Haney.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bill Haney with IBEW. Yes, we had, in early stages of investigating this bill, researching it, you know, that was part of the language that we thought would be an improvement. We also, but the problem is the first sentence, notwithstanding the second sentence, exempts the company from everything, any kind of licensure requirements. So, you know, they don't have to hire people that are electricians, licensed electricians. They don't have to hire people that want to become electricians. If somebody wants to become an electrician, they want to become an electrician. And they can ask for their hours to be certified. What the company wants to get away from is the supervision of people doing work. And I just don't think that's a very safe practice anywhere.
Mr. Quayle?
One last comment, Mr. Chair, I promise. All of the work that involves electrical work is covered by a collective bargaining agreement with United Steelworkers. All of the supervisory aspects of that in terms of the role of master electricians and journeymen is spelled out in that collective bargaining agreement. We're intending to fulfill those obligations because we were required to by contract. And again, all the work that's performed on a mine site is in fact inspected by the Federal Mine Safety Administration. So there's no shortcut here. We are trying to make this process administratively simpler for the company, no question about it. But we're doing this in tandem with our employees who are working as electricians who are represented by the United Steelworkers.
Mr. Haney, if you want to respond to that, please.
One other factual note here, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is that Mr. Coyle represents U.S. Steel. The bill applies to all mining companies, and most but not all mining companies have contractual agreements with the United Steelworkers.
Okay. Representative Lueck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple points. If the members would please take a look at page 2 of the bill and go down to about line 2.2, so we can kind of put into context here who is provided basically the same exemption, or if you take a look at 2.20, companies and their employees that plan, lay out, install, alter, repair class 2 or 3 remote control wiring, exempted from the same thing. 2.24, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, refrigeration contractors work all over the state, rural, in the metro area, basically same courtesy extended them. Certainly the electricity they work with tends to be a lot of 110, which is even more dangerous than 220 or 440. You don't need to get into the weeds as to why that is, but it is. If you go a little further, what we're trying to do here is provide a similar situation that the electrical communications, railroads, cable companies, telephone companies have. If you look, we're shall not be required to hold a license under sections 326 Bravo point 31 to 326 Bravo point 339. I'm on line 2.32. So I just want to put into context that we've heard a lot of testimony here about how horrifyingly dangerous, unsafe. We're completely abrogating all of the rules out here. If that's the case, then we better go repeal what we're doing with the railroads, the electric companies, the people that are doing high vacs. In case you didn't realize, a whole bunch of folks in the pipe fitters union do the high vac work. And the people they are employed by have a very similar situation here. So I just want to make sure this is in context. We're not doing any rocket science stuff here. In fact, the extra stuff in there that talks about being able to provide worker development so that somebody that aspires to become a master electrician, that simply provides a pathway there. These other companies can basically tell their workers, get screwed. We're not counting anything here for you. This basically provides a little more protection and help to those employees. So in conclusion here, I also mentioned that you simply couldn't make it. But we did have the steel workers folks testified previously in full support of this. So don't get the perception that that all the bargaining units out there in any way object to this. But again, stop and take a look at what we're asking to do here. It's pretty basic stuff.
Representative Luke, Mr. Coyle and Mr. Haney, what I'm going to advise, Representative Luke, you don't have to be there. Mr. Haney and Mr. Coyle, I'm going to advise that you schedule a meeting with the chair through the CLA. And we're going to sit down in my office. We're going to talk about this next week. Okay? We are not going to vote on a bill where there is fierce union opposition to this bill. I support the bill. I believe I understand it. I have to tell you that sometimes these things happen, but we're going to, us three are going to go upstairs and we're going to talk about it next Monday or next Tuesday. Anyways, so with that, I'm going to go to you, Representative Mahoney, but first of all, I want to make sure we're done with this bill. The chair renews his motion to have House File 1186 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you very much to our testifiers. Thank you, Representative Lueck. Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, I will correct the author of the bill. If in any industrial area, if you are doing pipe fitting work other than maintenance and repair, you're installing any kind of high pressure, you have to have a license, and this literally would be very precedent setting, not only just for pipe fitters, but boilermakers and anybody else who has a license. So I'm a little concerned there. And if you look on the first page, page 1.7, exemption from license, and you start going down, I guess it's point 9, the individual engaged in maintenance and repair of electrical equipment, apparatus, and facilities owned and leased by the individual's employer and are located within the property limits, they're exempt from having that license. They don't need it. They can do any maintenance. They can do any repair. They can replace anything that's actually in that particular plant. The only what this bill does is license a bunch of people in the event that there's a layoff, that they can go out and wire up a house. So I have some strong concerns about this bill, and I hope the chair and the people who have testified tonight can come up with some ideas.
Representative Pearson, you're up. Representative Pearson, do you have someone to move your bill?
I do not.
Representative Swazinski moves that House File 1199 be recommended to pass and referred to the HHS Finance Committee. Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is a little more controversial than your last one.
Not really.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1199 is actually not 100% sure why we were referred to your committee. While the terms minimum wage are discussed within the highlights of this bill, we aren't doing anything to impact or affect minimum wage. It's the impacts of the increase in the minimum wage on this specific industry that brings the bill to the House. What we're basically dealing with is community-based residential providers for people with disabilities. And basically what we have is a situation where the state of Minnesota provides 97% of the revenue to these entities. And so there's no private market where they can increase the costs or increase the fees that they charge to the provider, because the state of Minnesota is providing those funds. And by increasing the minimum wage over time and in its current condition, what's taking place is these facilities hire a lot of folks that actually stay overnight and sleep at the facility. And those folks have historically been paid minimum wage. And essentially what's happening is we're compacting those wages, and a larger share of the wages are creeping into the people who are sleeping overnight. And because there's no increase in how much revenue they're generating, that has to come out of the budget someplace. And currently they are either losing money or absorbing those costs by laying off folks that are doing the daytime work, or reducing the wages that are paid to the daytime employees. So as I said, this isn't affecting the minimum wage. This is essentially going to be increasing the pot for those entities so that they can meet their costs, and as the minimum wage increases, they can cover their anticipated expenses.
Representative Pearson, do you have any testifiers for this bill?
I don't feel I need any. If you have any questions, like I said, it's pretty straightforward.
I think, Representative Pearson, I think you hit the nail on the head that somebody saw minimum wage.
Right.
They know it's the jurisdiction of this committee, and it got referred here before we could take a look at it. So are there any members of the public who should testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Seeing none, we'll go to member questions. Mona, you got any amendments to the bill? Is that what you're talking to me about? Or
no.
Any questions from members of the committee?
Not till the floor.
Seeing none. With that, the chair renews. Representative Swazinski renews his motion. What? The chair renews his motion. Who moved this bill?
I did.
Representative Swazinski renews his motion to have House File 1199 recommend to pass and refer to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you have time for a new Sweet Street.
To the right spot.
Figured out they were complaining over there. We better start over there.
Do you have an author to move your bill, Representative Howe?
No, I do not. So anybody can take the shot at it.
Representative Simonson moves that House File 323 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I also have someone move the A2 amendment?
Representative Simonson moves the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Representative Howe, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what this bill does is it does basically two things. It allows for the membership dues for relief associations for volunteer organizations such as fire departments and rescue squads to be deducted out of their paycheck. And the other thing it does is it allows for volunteer fire departments, volunteer rescue squads, and volunteer ambulance services to agree not to be paid every 31 days. I was on a department for 19 years and we got paid annually because we just didn't go out that much. And so these rural fire departments and rural cities were getting dinged by the state auditor because they didn't follow this law and they didn't get paid every 31 days. So that's the essence of the law or the bill. And there is a testifier from the League of Minnesota Cities.
Welcome to the committee.
And other than that, that's it.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. And before we do, is there any members of the public who are here to testify in opposition to the bill? Okay. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Laura Kushner with the League of Minnesota Cities. Really, all I have to say is that the League is in support of this bill, and we hope you will pass it, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of the bill and move to member questions. Member questions. Any closing comments, Representative Howe?
No, it's a fairly simple, straightforward bill, and I appreciate it and ask for your support.
With that, Representative Simonson renews his motion to have House File 323 as amended, recommended to pass, and referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. 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 Opposed, say nay. The motion does not prevail. Just kidding. The motion prevails. The motion is adopted. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Minnie.
The final bill on our agenda today is House File 1175. Representative Mahoney moves that House File 1175 be considered for possible inclusion in a later bill. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Looks like you got a DE amendment.
Pardon?
You got a DE amendment?
I do have a DE3 amendment. It should be in your packet.
Representative Mahoney moves the DE3 amendment to get the bill in the form he would like. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair,
hold on. Members, the noise in the room is getting quite loud. Please take your conversations to the hallway.
The quieter we are, the faster I can get through this.
That's it, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is going back to an old concept. Brownfield cleanup, when it was started in the 90s, had a provision in it that allowed cities, counties, municipalities to clean up land that was polluted and put it back under the tax rolls without a developer there. So they could actually pre-clean up a piece of land, go out and market it. So you could clean up that gas station on the corner. So sections 1, 2, and 3 just adds that, which I'll explain in a moment, section 4, to the cleanup, contaminated cleanup grants. Section 4 is the definitions of all the cleanup grants. It's all the same language as in law today, except they took out, it's taken out of the grant, the brownfield cleanup. It does not include a provision that's in law today that requires it does not include the property acquisition provision. They don't use that anymore anyhow, to any great extent anyhow, any longer. Subdivision 2 at line 2.32 is the applications, and this is to the brownfield revitalization. This is just the contaminated cleanup language that's already in law. Except for the piece that's been taken out, which this is, gives the commissioner kind of the roadmap that they're supposed to follow as they make these grants. And I took out the development for the except for the development potential of the site or was use from a third or site cleanup for a third party. Down at and again, most of this is all current language. Same as except, and I'm going to go to where it talks about the grants on line 3.14. This again is the same language, except for the Livable Communities Act, which because many of the cleanup, much of the cleanup is done in metro area, and this is a statewide program, so it doesn't matter whether you live in Lake Wobegon or St. Paul. If you have a dirty corner or a plot of land that you're trying to get prepared to market to developers, you can use this particular program. Let's see, I want to get to the next one. On line 3.31, the commissioner may award grants to develop authorities for the cost of implementing an approved response plan without regard to whether the development is expected or planned for the site at the time the grant is made. That's the real key language there, so that people can clean up land ahead of time. Let's see, I'm trying to go through my and be brief. What I did put into this particular bill is that local units of government, if they cleaned up, use this fund to clean up a site, they turn around and sell it. Let's say they sell it for $100,000 or $1 million or whatever. They can create a special fund to use to pay their 25% match going forward, so that cities and municipalities can actually use this moving forward and get their land cleaned up in their cities and their towns and their townships. Section 5 on page 5 is the dollar figure, is the appropriation. This appropriates $6 million a year, and it is ongoing. So, Mr. Chair, it's a big dollar figure. I would hope that you would hold this bill over for inclusion in your omnibus bill.
Representative Mahoney, do you have any invited testifiers?
I try not to, sir.
Okay. This is a public hearing. Are there members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of our bill of this hearing and move to member questions. Questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Gunther.
Representative Mahoney and I went to a meeting this last summer, and we were very impressed with the importance of brownfields and brownfield cleanup and how it enhances our economy. And it's certainly one project, one bill that doesn't cost, it pays in the long run.
And members, I'll point out that Ms. Newman's research summary is drawn up to the DE3 amendment that is in your packet. So any additional comments or questions? Representative Mahoney, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is cleaning up brownfields. They go from every corner of the state and every municipality in the state. There are thousands and thousands of them. And if we don't start cleaning them up, they will continue to be a drain on our other taxpayers. So I would hope that you would help me try to put these things back in the tax rolls. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, Representative Mahoney renews his motion to have House File 1175 as amended laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. And Representative Mahoney and members of the committee, I appreciate everyone being quick and to their points tonight to be able to get through with our agenda and still have some of the evening left. It's appreciated.
Thank you.
With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.